bit of news from the other side of the Atlantic. AFC Richmond announced the hiring of their new manager, American football coach Ted Lasso.
You're an American who's now in charge of a football club despite possessing very little knowledge of the game.
Oh! I know that AFC Richmond is going to give you everything they got, win or lose.
Or tie.
Right, y'all do ties here.
Did you see that?
He must be from England, yeah. Wales. Is that another country?
Yes and no.
How many countries are in this country?
Four.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm your host, JVL, along with Sonny Bunch, Victorino Mattis, and our very special guest, Kristen Soltist Anderson.
Hello, just a reminder. Boys.
Hey, everybody, it's Sonny Bunch again, interrupting this free episode that you are getting on Apple. Or Stitcher, where I don't even know where people will listen when they're not on the Patreon. You should be on the Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. But I'm interrupting this episode to say that if you want all of the great dudes chatting and a lady chatting, you gotta sign up for the Subbeacon at our Patreon. It's not very expensive. It can be as little as a dollar a month if that's all you can afford to chip in. But we wanted to make sure that you could listen to the Ted Lasso talk, because we all love Ted Lasso. We think everybody should be watching it. So listen to that. If you find yourself missing the dudes and one lady chatting, maybe you should go to subbeacon.com and sign up. Not very expensive. And we miss you. We miss you guys. All right. So now on with the show.
So we are here this week to talk about Ted Lasso, and I would like to preface this before we go to Sonny,
yeah,
or Kristen for the big boy review. Oh. I don't know who we should go. Kristen, what did you just switch up to? You were doing red wine, and now you are...
No, it was beer. I was just drinking it out of a glass.
Oh, okay.
And then like, the glass is Belgian. Almost empty, and if I pour it, it makes a noise, and so I switched to the can. It
fair
is
enough.
Cigar City Brewing Brown Ale
Maduro.
No, hold.
Wait, save that for... Spirit of the
week.
Don't jump the segments, newbie.
I'm so sorry.
I'm not sure
I knew
who's
I would
doing
mess
the big
this
boy.
Up.
I don't know which of you is doing the big boy review, but I would like to say I do not watch any series television. And the last two series television shows I have watched are all because of you, KSA. And they are because you sat me down and said, you have to watch this. And the first one was Good Place. And now Ted Lasso. You're batting 1,000 in my book.
Whoa! Oh,
that's wonderful.
So, in fact, I said to Shannon, I said, so we should just only watch shows that Kristen is really, really adamant that we watch. That's our metric. Anyway, so which of you two wants to do the big boy review? Because I assume Gene did not watch Ted Lasso. Sonny?
Kristen, do you want to... What's... Come on.
Come on. This is your...
Humorous.
This is it. You're here. Might
okay,
as well do it.
Okay. Big girl review of Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso is a show developed by Apple Plus that is derived from a piece of intellectual property from NBC Sports from the early 2010s when soccer was having a bit of a moment here in the United States. Jason Sudeikis and one of his best friends created the character of Ted Lasso, who is an American football coach brought over to coach a Premier League soccer team in the UK. It is set up as a fish out of water, jokes about Americans not understanding things about the UK and vice versa, things about football in America being different than football in the UK. But where the show expands upon the original 4-minute YouTube video is that the premise is that Ted Lasso has been brought over on this somewhat ridiculous mission because the team has been taken over by the now ex-wife of the former owner who loved the team, and the ex-wife would very much like to see the team fail. And so she has brought over this YouTube famous ridiculous coach in hopes of crushing her ex-husband emotionally, and thus hilarity ensues.
That's pretty good.
That's great. Yeah.
That's a good review.
It's a solid review.
So who wants to drive first? Victorino? Would you like to tell us what you thought of it? Did you watch the whole thing?
Of course I did. I had to finish it, and so did.
Did you understand
Kate.
It?
No, I could have used subtitles. There was a lot of this in a little
Jimmy Tart.
And then so there was a lot of that going on, and then of course even Ted Lasso and his buddies, and the assistant coach, they talk fast, and there's a lot of stuff that they say under their breath that I know is funny. But I just missed it.
And so you laughed anyway.
I laughed anyway because I said, this has got to be good. And then sometimes I'll have to turn to Kate and say, what did he say? And then she'll tell me what they said. And I said, oh, that is funny. And other times I'm like, I don't feel like rewinding and having to, so I miss it. But after a while, you do get into the lingo and then it becomes easier to understand. And I have to tell you, I love this through and through. I really, really did. Because, you know, when you get the premise of it, you're thinking to yourself, oh, okay, well, you know, we're familiar with this kind of thing before, whether it be Major League or even if you remember First and 10, you know, on HBO, you know, it's an ongoing theme. Uh-oh, you know, the woman owner of the team and she wants to see it fail or this or that. Okay, fine. But then it goes deeper. So it delves deeper and you think you know who Ted Lasso is sort of this caricature of this coach from Kansas. And then, in fact, it takes a very serious turn more towards the end of the series. And I thought, wow, it was just giving me more depth than I expected. And the other great thing about it is, much like with Simpson characters that are very well developed over years, you really do enjoy the other characters. They're not just side characters surrounding Ted Lasso. You could have whole episodes devoted to these little subplots, whether it be, you know, Keely and Roy, or Keely and Rebecca, for that matter, or even Nathan. I love Nathan, you know? And so all these little bit players are not actually bit players. And as our friend, it is Larry Miller, right, who said, you know, there are no bit parts. You have to play your small character, your beat, you know, your character as the main. You have to think of him as the main actor. And I think that's what they do. It really works. And you develop real sympathy for some of these people. So I really very much enjoy it. There you go.
Sonny.
Yeah.
So you're dead inside.
Yeah.
But yet, this is a show for people with love in their hearts.
Yeah. Well, this
Did
is,
you hate
so,
it?
No. So this is what I really liked about it, was that it's sweet without being saccharine. Mm-hmm. There is a niceness at the heart of it that is not... that doesn't like curdle into like, ugh, this is gross. It just is. It's just constantly very, very nice. And like the reason it works is because Jason Sudeikis is like a kind of fundamentally ridiculous person. When in his performances, I mean, this has always been. This is why I've always argued that he is the most underrated SNL cast member of the last, I don't know, 20 years or so after the Will Ferrell era, because he is like he commits fully to whatever bit he is in. And the bit he is doing here is essentially not football coach. It's not football coach. It doesn't sports don't really matter to this. He's a life coach. He's a Tony Robbins style figure. He's just trying to make people better. Better people, not better soccer players, not better football players, not better coaches, not better owners, whatever. He's just trying to make them better people. And it really all works because he, again, fully commits to the idea of this guy as like as a nice dude who's very very winning and very, very into it. I don't know. I like the whole thing. There are little things about it that I will think about sometimes and they will just make me laugh. Like when Jamie Tartt scores the goal and he just starts pointing to the back of his jersey, he's like, me, me, me. And the look on Jason Sudeikis' face as he's doing this, it's just like, it's all so perfect. It's all, there are these people who are either super self-absorbed or super not unsure of themselves or, you know, doing things for the wrong reasons. And Ted Lasso, this character, is able to pinpoint all of the things that are wrong and to fix them. And I found it deeply, deeply pleasing to watch on an episode by episode basis.
What's so fascinating about that, though, is the difference between the Ted Lasso that shows up in this series versus the Ted Lasso of the 4-minute NBC promo in 2013. So that promo in 2013 is, you know, he's playing it much more as, he's playing it with a little bit more of an edge. It's a little more aggressive. It's not really exuding nice so much as, you know, arrogant dumb. But I also remember thinking that that 4-minute ad from NBC was really funny, and sort of being excited when I heard that there was going to be a Ted Lasso show. But when the first promo for the actual show came out, I was nervous that it wasn't going to be very good. Because, so I'll give you an example. In the original NBC 4-minute clip, that joke where he's, you know, in the clip he points at a soccer player and he's like, well, where's he from? Is he from England? And the assistant coach says, no, Wales, sir. And he goes, well, how many countries are in this country? And the response is 4, sir. And it all just like zips really quickly. And then that same joke appears in the first episode of this Ted Lasso, and it was in the promo for the show. And it played out slower. It wasn't as funny. And I thought, oh no, this show is just going to be the reheated leftovers. They took a 4-minute thing that was good and they're going to try to stretch it into a show. And I just don't know if there's going to be enough there. And so I did not, even though I loved that initial Ted Lasso clip and I thought it was funny and I'm interested in soccer and I vaguely follow the Premier League, I just didn't think this would be for me. And so I was so surprised and delighted to see that they had taken Ted Lasso in this kinder, gentler direction that actually makes it have so much more of a payoff in the end.
Well, and they do that by foisting some of the harder edges off onto other players, yeah. and onto other characters, like the old soccer, what's his
Roy
name?
Kent.
Roy Kent, who is,
oh, he's the best.
Who is at the end of his career, and is like kind of, you know, angry that he's being coached by Ronald McDonald, as he puts it at one point, but who also still, for all of his rough edges, you know, reads Madame L'Engle books, right, with his daughter,
Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, and then or Jamie Tart, again, like kind of a harder edged. He's you know, the brash upstart who is trying to, you know, carry the team on his shoulders and knows that he's the best guy on the pitch at all times. But he still, you know, has that kind of vulnerable side to him who, as the season goes along, we realize, you know, he's got his own issues.
Pushed and around by his dad.
Ted Lasso helps him solve some of his issues. So, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was great.
Did you like also the Baby Shark song remade as Jamie Tart?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Ted. Jamie Tart.
Yeah. I had a question. Was it ever... was the promo on NBC, did they ever think it was going to be a show on NBC? Because I could totally see this as a TV show on one of the three networks, but it would not have been as good because of language and things like that.
I'm not sure. I know that at one point I was reading about the origins of all of this and that Jason Sudeikis had been, I think, living in the Netherlands with the guy who plays Coach Beard, the assistant coach, in both the promo and in this, and that they had sort of cooked up this character from just learning about soccer while they were living, I think it was in the Netherlands. And so this was a character, it wasn't that they had developed this for NBC, it was something they had just sort of cooked up as,
that's great,
you know, buddies trying to get started in their careers, and then it's blossomed from there.
I could totally
And you can
see
tell
like,
too,
you know,
something that I really love is the friendship between Ted Lasso and Coach Beard. It feels very real, and that's because it is very real. I mean, they are
that's
in
right,
real life
friends. No.
The best
I could totally
of friends.
See it, like,
and
you know,
I think it really comes through on screen. Because I feel like they are all,
I can see it like a 9 o'clock
a real
show.
Triumph of the show is that everybody behaves largely like a real person might. Which is hard to do in a show that's trying to be so funny. But like, I imagine that Keeley is exactly what I would get if I were to meet one of these wags, the wives and girlfriends of football players. Like, I actually think she's just like such this charming. But when push comes to shove and these characters have conflict, some TV shows push it to weird extremes and people behave so bizarre just to draw out the drama. Mm-hmm. And something that's great about this Ted Lasso, the way they handle it, is everybody behaves like an adult. Somebody does something wrong and they admit it. There is forgiveness. People move on instead of things that other shows I feel might draw out for
That's seasons. Right. You know, you're conditioned to, for example, I felt conditioned to hate Rebecca from the onset. Oh, I know what she's doing here. She's here. You know, she's the villain and you're going to, you know, and she's going to do these terrible things and she'll be thwarted every step of the way. Ha ha. It's done in less than 30 minutes or whatever it is. And then they make you feel sympathetic to her for these little things, all these little slights. Okay, we understand that she's angry at her husband, her ex-husband, but then it builds until, you know, the final kicker, you know, at the towards the end of the season, spoiler alert, when Rupert says that he's having a you know, and one of the worst things ever is, you know, I'm having a baby. Oh, you know, I just didn't want to have one with you, you know, and that's and then you see her and you see how she's trying to hold up. And I thought it was great. And you mentioned Keeley. Kristen, I love her.
Go ahead. I get it all out.
Love her.
The great Juno Temple.
She has a great line when they're going on their little trip to Liverpool, and Rebecca says, "Oh no, you know, I don't want you to think that." We're like, "Oh my gosh, you know, the idea of like sharing a bed, like what would happen there?" And Rebecca goes, "Oh, I mean, just thinking about it." And Keeley says something to the effect of, "Oh, I've thought about it," but in like a positive way. So hot.
I think my favorite Keeley moment might have been when she is looking at the pictures of Rebecca topless on the boat. And she, what does she say? She says, I'm like a teenage boy. I can't stop looking. Right.
JVL, did you like the Ted Lasso riff on practice? We're talking about practice.
Having like an Allen Iverson bit in there was really quite delicious.
And we're supposed to assume that the players have no idea about what he's talking about, right? And he's like,
"No,
turning
everybody."
Do we think that Allen Iverson speech exists in the Ted Lasso universe,
100%.
And that everyone is aware of it?
But I mean, do you think that the players
know
what he's talking about?
No, the players don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
but
exactly.
Know, he and Coach Beard know.
That's right.
That's what's funny. He's making a joke,
right?
For him and Coach Beard,
right.
And he keeps making it because nobody else is getting it.
Nobody's getting it. He's going over and over, and they're just staring at him. Right.
So can I go a little deep here?
JVL, you didn't tell us more about like how what you think, so go for it.
I propose to you that Ted Lasso is the rarest of birds, which is a television series which inadvertently captures the zeitgeist of a moment in American history.
Sure.
Like MASH, maybe. Like All in the Family, maybe. And I don't think that it was intended to be this way. But Ted Lasso turns out to be the show for the year 2020. Mm-hmm. And I would make the argument in the following way. 2020 was about isolation, right? Because of the pandemic, we were all shunted into our little bubbles. And I hear that many people did not like that. I thought it was great, but many people found it confining and alienating. And Ted Lasso is about, first and foremost, the search for connection. It's about people trying to be connected to one another. 2020 was also marked by, without getting too political, the worst internal divisions in America since probably 1865 or so, give or take. And Ted Lasso is about healing a workplace which is full of deep divisions. The whole setup for the show turns out to be synecdoche for America in the year 2020. And the brilliance of it is that it sells you, at least for the first episode and a half, maybe in the first two episodes, on the idea that Ted Lasso is essentially Forrest Gump, that he's this idiot savant who, you know, walks through life and is making things better just kind of by magic. But he's not. He's really a grandmaster, right? I mean, he's in total control. And I think that the show finally, you know, there's so much show and don't tell in Ted Lasso. And the moment where I think they really make it obvious to the audience is where Ted and Keeley are sitting having that silly little debate about should she go as a panda or a lion? And she's getting dressed up for some photo shoot, and it's a really funny bit between the two of them, and she's doing some great physical comedy, and Jamie Tart walks in, and Ted says to him, "Would you rather be a panda bear or a lion?" And Jamie Tart goes, "I'd rather be Jamie Tart," right? And it's hysterical, right? Because the joke here is that Jamie Tart is so self-absorbed that he says he'd just rather be Jamie Tart. Why would he want to be a lion or a panda? And Ted throws away this line where he says, "You have no idea how healthy that is, do you?" And that's the little moment where we are first shown that Ted is actually smarter than everybody else. And the way he does it, Ted's superpower is that he is able to make people feel seen. That turns out to be the key to understanding, the key towards rapprochement with people, is simply helping people to feel seen. Because what Ted understands is that in this world, so much of our conflict comes from the fact that we feel as though we're invisible and that nobody else can see us and understand us. And one of the most beautiful things he does, he says to Rebecca at the night of the big charity auction. Mm-hmm. And he says, "I know you think that you're the only one who sees what he really is, mm-hmm. but you're not."
Right.
That is the most comforting thing. Again, it is exactly what she needs to hear in that moment, because it's about seeing and being seen.
There's also
There's
also a very subtle thing he does when he first meets Rebecca with Rupert at the same time there. You know, he's there standing and they're having this exchange, and Rupert has this very, you know, backhanded compliment to her, and he furrows his eyebrow like, "Ooh, you know, that's not good." I mean, it was just, you know, because he's picking, despite the fact that he puts on this big, he has this shell, and it's always smiles and confidence and optimism and witticisms, but, you know, he knows what's going on. And I tell you, the weight of being the eternal optimist, it's heavy. And every now and then you just have to just let it go. And he has that moment, obviously, during the karaoke thing when he has a panic attack and he can't, you know, he's in the middle of a divorce. He can't keep it up anymore. It's heavy. A fellow optimist.
Well, no, this is why Vic threatens to quit the show every 6 months.
I can't do it.
Vic calls us up in a tizzy. He's like, "I can't do it anymore. I can't do this show.
I am so." In fact, the three of you would be
I'm
great.
So tired of carrying your dead inside souls.
And I gotta be grinning from ear to ear, even
though
you can't see me.
Sahara of a podcast.
Even though you can't see me, it is hard work. And I so fully connected and related to Ted Lasso, and I love the character to pieces. It is the show. You know, after the year we've had and going into who knows what's coming up next, it's definitely the show that we needed.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Kristen.
For me, it was around the third episode when he gives for everybody on the team, he puts a gift in their locker, and it's a book.
Yes.
And it's not, they
different
don't all books. Get the same book. They all get books that are sort of personalized to what you can tell he thinks they need to see. And of course, Jamie Tart, you know, he doesn't care. He throws the book away. But Roy Kent, who is the old player who used to be great, now he's the team captain. He's kind of gruff, but, you know, he's definitely lost a step, as they say. And they give him A Wrinkle in Time. And, you know, they haven't really developed the Roy character up until that point. And he takes this book, and the episode shows him mentoring or going to his niece's school for the day. And it's very cute. And the you know, headmaster of the school says, "Oh, we've never had a player come stay this long. This is so nice.
All right, let's go have a fuck about."
And at the end of the day, it's Roy Kent sitting in, you know, bed reading this book to his niece. And he gets to this part where basically they say, you know, he's reading this line, "It can't be anyone else. It has to be me." And it all clicks for him, like,
that's
exactly
so
what's going on here. But throughout the show, they're dropping, they drop a ton of like musical theater and just theater general, you know, references and things to sort of show like Ted Lasso, don't judge a book by his cover. He can make One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest jokes with the best of them. And like, you know, things like that.
Did you happen to catch the book that he did give Jamie Tart?
Wasn't it an F. Scott Fitzgerald book?
Yeah, it was The Beautiful and Damned.
It's
fantastic.
The wordplay jokes with he and Coach Beard are such a fabulous running gag because they're so subtle, but, you know, they got the boot and put your boots in a boot. And they're talking about the three. You can see these, again, it's one of these gags where you can imagine the two of them making those jokes to each other over the course of 20 years.
Yes.
You know, long before they show up in this television show that we're observing and then long afterwards.
That's right. The chemistry is very apparent.
I gotta say, this is the first streaming show I have ever watched which felt every bit as lean as a top flight broadcast show. Did any of you notice that? Like, there's no fat on any of these episodes.
It feels like a good HBO show is what it feels like. It feels like a Veep or Silicon Valley.
Well, or what I think it has a lot of DNA from is Scrubs. So you'll notice that one of the, I think, executive producers on the show is Bill Lawrence, who is the guy behind Scrubs. Zach Braff, I think, directs the second episode. And there's the thing that I think is the most Scrubsian about the show is the commitment to a really good soundtrack. I feel like TV shows don't do that anymore. Oh. They don't pay attention to making the music cues really just hit. And Scrubs was always very good at that.
And it's a lot of Mumford and this show songs, is isn't it? A lot of Mumford. At that.
So the theme song sounded to me like XTC, and I thought, oh, they've gone back and gotten this great British pop, and it's Mumford.
Yeah, it's
Mumford. Marcus Mumford, isn't it?
Well, do yourselves a favor. Boys, have any of you seen the music video for the Mumford & Sons song, Hopeless Wanderer?
Oh, no, okay. But let me guess who's in it. Oh, go ahead.
Well, guess who's in it?
Jason Sudeikis?
Jason Sudeikis, Jason Bateman, and oh my gosh. Will Forte, the other one of the other SNL guys. Yeah. It's the three of them. Do yourselves a favor. Stop. If you're listening to this podcast, press pause. Go Google this. And so Mumford and the Mumford guy and Jason Sudeikis obviously have had a long friendship too. And that I think that music just because they have like a score throughout the show. And I just think it adds so much.
It is absolutely. It's on a level with those shows and Big Bang Theory, too.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
I just love the crap out of the whole thing. And it's earnest. And the other thing it does is that the show gives us what we need and not what we want. And again, a perfect example is just the finale, right?
Right.
Where they
spoiler alert.
I'm just assuming everybody has watched this whole thing, where they lose the championship match, which is exactly what the story needs. The story needs them to lose. We don't want them winning. You know,
and it's not just that they lose. They lose because Jamie Tart learned the lesson.
Yes,
that's exactly. Ted Lasso was teaching him. You have to pass the ball.
That's exactly because Jamie makes the extra pass, which is one of the reasons that Ted is able to walk away from that game genuinely happy.
He helped him.
Because what he genuinely likes is helping to coach people. And I would say I have one very serious complaint about it, which is that the show is deeply steeped into British culture. But there's one thing they simply refuse to do. Not a single use of the C word.
Oh.
And Sonny,
you want the Guy Ritchie version of this?
I think you would agree with me.
No, I agree. I mean, look.
This whole series would be 10% better if every other episode somebody said the C word.
Of course. I mean, look, I've always argued that America has a very unhealthy relationship with the C word, that we should be much more like our British counterparts.
More casual.
It's my only real Britishism that remains from my time over there. But 100%, everything would be 10% better with a C word every
Kristen, you agree, right? Because when the British do it, it's
absolutely
okay.
Absolutely no comment. I do wonder, Vic, in the quadrants, there is discussion of female nudity, but it's not seen. There is, however,
it's enough
one
for me.
Scene
it's
of fine. Male nudity. What does that do to the quadrants?
You mean like a locker room when they're changing?
There is a brief locker room scene.
There's like a rear end.
Right? Yeah. It's not a lot, but I'm wondering how does that get calculated in your quadrants?
That's funny.
Well, it's sort of stretched out because we don't know what's going to happen in season two. So, you know, a jury's still out on that quadrant part. But so I look forward to Ted Lasso 2, Back to the Miners, as it is.
There was also a very funny, I'm thinking of the nudity now. There's a very funny and telling bit very early in the show where he like puts tape over
puts
the
electrical tape over girl, the naked over because Keeley is a page three girl.
Yeah, right exactly.
Right, so Keeley is a page three girl who's
famous
become
for almost
a soccer
being
girlfriend.
Famous, as she says.
And the bit where we see her having done a gig as the hotel channel,
the hotel host. Channel girl,
so funny. Mm-hmm. God, it's great.
I would watch that over and over. That channel. I love hotel channels. I just leave it on loop. I like the music of the hotel channels. I will say one of the most graphic, horrible things that JB Tart said that was still nevertheless funny was when his Nigerian teammate was asking for advice. We were giving advice on how to be better. And he says,
go back in time.
Go back in time and
have your
mother
fuck Maradona.
No, and he says, take a helicopter, go to Argentina and drop her on Maradona's cock. That's what he says. And just like, wow, that was harsh, but funny.
So I have a question for you all in the magazine world, which is, or
what's
in the journalism world, just generally.
What's a magazine?
We've spent time in that universe. About Trent Crim. So in the show, if you're listening to this, I mean, again, I'm sorry, we've already spoiled it for you, but there's a character who plays one of the reporters covering AFC Richmond. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me that Trent Crim seems very much like someone I can imagine writing for Rolling Stone. But it's hard. Does somebody like Trent Crim cover sports?
I feel like in England, that is a much bigger beat.
Okay.
Then it would be here. Like the guy, he's writing for the Telegraph, right?
The Independent.
Yeah. So he's writing for the Independent. He's like their soccer guy. I feel like that's a pretty big beat. But you're right, though. He definitely comes across as like a Vanity Fair style writer, much more than like a daily beat reporter.
But I will also say, you know, again, talking about the authenticity of all these characters, that episode where he has the interview, you know, you can't help being in the line of work that we're in to watch him like a hawk. You know, it's like when you if doctors see movies or TV shows and they can say, oh, that's not real, this or that. And I'm looking at him he totally pulls it off. I mean, that is exactly how that type of journalist would be and act and try to keep that separation. And he's not going to, you know.
And
I mean,
that's the piece he would write. It's what I thought when I was watching it was like that is like how Labash would square that circle between like realizing that this guy is a buffoon who is not qualified for his position. Mm-hmm. But also like totally likable.
But also how he comports himself even in a casual setting like that restaurant. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's still a little bit of that distance there. I mean, that's not how I am with my subjects, but a responsible journalist. A responsible journalist would be much like that.
And
I said that's spot on. It was spot on.
Well, Vic, you're normally under the table at that point. With Michelle.
Oh yes, you know? Oh yes, thank you. I'm on the floor. Okay.
Michelle Richard, that's a man.
That's right.
By the way.
Thank
that's
you. All right, thank you. I have no idea how we're doing on time, by the way, because we have to splice this.
Here's a question.
We should be exiting.
Is this the first legitimately great sitcom to come out of non-HBO streaming?
Mythic Quest is also very good, also on Apple TV+.
I regret to inform you, Sunny is right. I think Ted Lasso's better, but Mythic Quest is better than it has any right to be.
I think it's very, very close. I mean, Mythic Quest is made by the guys who made Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I've always had a very soft spot for. Okay. And it is very funny, and it's the only show that has had a good post-pandemic episode. Mm-hmm. It's the only show with a good lockdown episode. So,
So what do we think this means for Apple? Is Ted Lasso the kind of series which could get people? Because I have, over the last week, since Kristen blessedly made me watch this, I have proselytized to probably 24 people and said,
watch the show.
Go sign up for Apple Plus right now.
Just for Ted Lasso.
Just for Ted Lasso.
Yes. I can't imagine somebody...
It's only one-third of a, it's only one-third of a max.
It got nominated for a Golden Globe, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, that is something.
$5 a month when the max is $15 a month. Who would pay that for the max?
More importantly, though, everybody who has bought an iPhone or a MacBook or other Apple gear over the last 18 months.
Yeah, I got one for free.
Has gotten a offer for essentially a free year of Apple TV Plus.
Really?
And
I just bought a Mac Mini today.
You are going to
come
a
with
thing.
A free.
You'll get
you
a
will probably get something. I mean, I swear to God. So I was. Mm-hmm. I remember I got my new phone right before the pandemic started, right before the lockdown started, and it came with an offer for Apple TV Plus, and like, I just ignored it because I was like, Apple TV Plus, there's nothing on here that I want. And eventually a little icon popped up. It was like, this expires in 6 days if you don't activate us. I was like, all right, fine. I'll do it. And I will say that, like, again, genuinely, Mythic Quest and Ted Lasso are probably two of my, like, three or four favorite shows of all of 2020. The movies haven't been terrible.
I saw Greyhound last night, and I have to tell you, the meat of it.
We did a whole show about that.
I know. I wasn't there for that. I wasn't there for that. Pod was there. It was you guys and Pod. But I didn't listen to it because I didn't see the movie. So I saw it just yesterday, and the meat of it is great. But it's so weird because, you know, a lot of these war movies always feel like they have to, this is a whole other episode, by the way, but they always feel like they have to do some other, like, non-war, non-battle scene that involves a wife or this and that. And, you know, and it's like, you know, how long
getting
is
getting a woman on screen?
Yeah, to develop some sort of...
No. Just stick with the Nazis.
Just stick with the Nazis. I wanted to see what's going on in the U-boat. I want to see what's going on in the Greyhound.
I am not satisfied with these taunts. I want to see the actual
Your
planning.
Comrades will die tonight. No, but I wanted to, but then, you know, this was like the exact opposite where they tried to just throw in 2 minutes of Elizabeth Shue. And I'm like,
fantastic.
What?
Best choice.
You could have held your breath for her
now,
scenes.
Sonny, you said you got your phone right before the pandemic and it had an offer for Apple Plus.
It had an offer for Apple TV Plus. It was like a free year or a free 6 months or something.
So Vic got his phone right before 9/11. And did that come, do you think that came with an offer for someday, 20 years from then, if they launched
for
a
Apple
streaming
Plus.
Service,
yes.
He would get a
said,
full
if
year
Apple
of that?
Does a TV show.
That came with an offer for 20 free texts. 20 free texts.
But only,
text messages.
But yeah,
well,
but don't send me texts because I don't want to pay for that. I don't want to pay for the text.
It was the keyboard where you had to press A three times.
I don't want
to
pay
to
get the right one. Yes,
to get
the right letter. To get the right letter. As you know, there's only 9 buttons there for that, or plus zero. But I'm not. Don't send me texts because I'm gonna,
remember that.
I don't want to get paid. I don't want to get charged for the texts.
Well, I'm glad you all have phones because. In the words of Roy Kent, it means you don't need a watch. JBL, I assumed you enjoyed that little line when she's teasing him about your last girlfriend stole your Rolex and sold it for drug money. And he's like, I don't need a phone and a watch. I thought, oh, I feel like Sonny has said that verbatim on this show.
I laughed so hard.
I mean, it's true. This is what this is what we're saying about this show. It has truth in it. And this is how real people react to the world. You know, you need a watch when you got your iPhone.
Full of great characters.
Something that my husband did note, by the way, that he appreciated as an Apple fanboy is supposedly in every shot, you can see that people have phones in their pockets. Like that's like a weird little like set dressing thing.
Wow.
But that like I don't think most TV shows think of, but like it's Apple, so...
Well, Apple's very, very kind of Nazi-ish about this. Speaking of Nazis,
yeah, they're all using all their laptops are, you know, obviously.
Like Tim Cook has laid down rules about what sorts of characters can have iPhones and how everybody else should have iPhones. Like, I mean, it's like it's crazy.
Drug dealers use Samsung.
They use Android platforms.
All right. Enough Ted Lasso. Spirit of the week. I am drinking the Hardywood Gingerbread Stout, which I stockpile every December. And I'm on to my last 4-pack.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm very, very sad. It's delicious. Kristen, can you please, now that it's the appropriate time... in the show. Tell us what you were drinking.
Yes, I am drinking a Cigar City Brewing Maduro Brown Ale.
Does it mean it tastes like
delicious.
A cigar?
No, it's a brown ale, so I'll read you what's on the can. Named after a dark cigar wrapper, Maduro Brown Ale boasts notes of semi-sweet chocolate, toffee, and hints of fresh coffee.
Okay, thank you.
I'm like Keely.
Sonny, what were you shotgunning there, big guy?
I took my bottle of Kaiō whiskey straight to the face.
The Japanese?
When you guys were talking about
the Japanese whiskey? Is that Japanese?
The Japanese...
I'm sorry, can you say the name of that brand again, please?
Kaiō whiskey.
Kaiō.
You can't say
that. It's the 7-year
You can't
say Kristen, don't spit it all over your microphone. You were so close.
I actually did, for the record, to everybody listening at home, the cork was in it when I mimed taking it to the face. I did not actually...
You didn't do a full Jim Morrison.
Take it to the face.
Okay. Victorina, are you drinking?
What are you doing over there? We can't even see you. I assume
everybody should know, Victorino's camera has been broken for 3 weeks now, and so we can't see him at all.
It's really annoying.
I think that I may just send him an external camera to clip to his laptop.
That would,
do you have the clamshell MacBook. Do you remember those with the giant?
No, I'm using the cube.
With the neon green.
The cube. No, I had a Beaujolais, but something light because it's the weekday. You know, I don't start drinking in earnest until Friday. No,
Isn't Beaujolais a scam?
No. Good French Beaujolais
Are you sure?
is still good. Good French
I thought
Beaujolais
was a scam. It's like, hey, no. Let's take these grapes that we always used to throw out because they're the first ones of the season.
No,
it to the Americans with a French name.
No. They're good.
I read the wine guy and
I have
the
a
Wall
book
Street
of Beaujolais.
Journal
also, it
okay.
was it's the everyday very cheap wine. It's not a Chateauneuf de Pape. It's just like, oh, I had to open it up. So there you go.
Corrections, additions, shout-outs. The first shout-out, of course, goes to Kristen. Thank you for coming on the show with us today.
Woo!
It was fantastic.
It has been my honor, gentlemen.
Thank you so
Anybody
much.
Anybody else have anything?
No, that's it.
Shout-out to Chris Anderson for letting us borrow his wife for a little while.
That's right. Hoya Saxa, Chris. Oh, sorry.
I don't think that's how it works anymore. I don't think that's, you know.
Okay, that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorino Mattis. Kristen, do you want them tweeting at you or no?
Sure. At Ksoltis Anderson. But don't complain about pictures of my dog because that's what you're going to get. So just know going in.
And at JV Last. Make sure you ping at JV Last when you're tweeting at Kristen because JVL wants to hear from you.
Please tag Kristen into the mega thread. She'll enjoy that.
No.
Leave a comment at subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
So.
All right, Victorino, what do you got?
Do you really think I need a computer, a new computer? Because I'm using one from that belonged to the wife of listener Sean Hackbarth. This is Alyssa Canopio's computer, which must be from the
Once
last 5 years at least, you know?
It's old. I mean, that is, and she probably got it from somebody else who worked at the Beacon before that. So, like, that is probably an original Washington Free Beacon laptop. God only knows what sort of spyware and other stuff is on
don't
there.
Go there. I think it's fine. I don't know why
your computer doesn't work. We can't see you,
it's
Vic.
Some sort of
it's
a
not
software
fine.
Thing. I got kicked out of the iCloud, but it wasn't even for me. It was for Alyssa's iCloud. I don't know why. And Harrison's name is on it. I'm rather confused. But you know what, though? I can see you guys. I can use Word Perfect on it. And also, I can play my video games on here. I got
my DOS
I
prompt.
Got, I got
comes
Zork.
Up.
I can play Zork and Karateka. Karateka.
Karateka. Karateka.
Which I used to call Karateka. As in Rise of Erotica.
That's something else.
I'm sure it's fine.
Anime.
Honestly,
I hope
that the piano
feud between Rick Jones
yeah,
pianos
I know.
Is of interest to literally anybody.
Yeah, I know, right? Unless you live in Beltsville. I was talking to King.
We
were trying to speculate what that meant. So
I do know. So JVL, this I have to thank you. We are coming upon my husband's birthday, and you will recall that last year it was his birthday where you saved me.
You
from
know, are, somebody
wife birthday disaster.
JVL, you turned on the recording.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well,
go
here
ahead.
We go.
Keep going.
You saved me from wife birthday disaster because I knew my husband was kind of dabbling with the idea of becoming a watch guy. And so at like 5:30 p.m. the night before his birthday, I'm in New York City. I text JVL, help, I'm in a panic. And he says, you are a 15-minute walk from the Seiko boutique on Madison or Park or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Walk or run, don't walk. And this is what you want. You want this watch. You want the Grand Turtle with the samurai. I don't even remember what it is. It's cool. It has a shark fin on it. Yeah, and it does. He likes it. You told me not to get one with a Cyclops. I didn't even know what that was. I'm like arguing with the guy at the Seiko boutique, like, my friend told me I'm not supposed to get one with a Cyclops. And he's like, they all come with a Cyclops.
No,
it's cool. Cyclops. Your friend is wrong. And now my husband's pretty obsessed with watches. So
what is the next purchase in the Anderson household?
So they are, this is a, like a long-term reach thing, but he really likes Nomos watches. He's been like eyeballing them and Nomos tried a couple on his wrist. Hoot. Yes. So that's his like, that's his next reach.
Yeah. Stretch thing. Goal.
So this is all your fault. Like listening to this podcast over the years has been an incredibly expensive thing. I have a freaking Weber Genesis grill because of Vic. My husband buys watches because of JVL. You all have cost me so much money.
I've not cost you anything, for the record.
She's going to get Japanese whiskey next. She's going to get Japanese whiskey.
Oh, no, no. Be done for. She has the one-off steel box copy of
Sucker Punch.
Of Sucker Punch, where it was cut for a single the Shrek. Shkreli? Oh,
Shkreli.
The Shkreli version of Sucker Punch for Zack Snyder.
Jealous.
I'm sure it's fine.